The following podcast is a production of Institutional Real Estate Incorporated. For the most comprehensive industry news and information, visit our website at irei.com and sign up for our free daily news alerts.
Welcome to the program. The British government has published proposals to strengthen its powers of review and potentially block or unwind infrastructure investments on national security grounds. The question is this: what should investors and investment managers know about this process and how to manage it going forward? To explore that topic, our guest is Janine Hulsman. She is a partner at the law firm of Clifford Chance. She specializes in competitive law and regulation with a particular focus on energy and infrastructure. We will discuss with her the firm's recent report titled UK Reviews National Security Impact of Foreign Investment. Janine Hulsman, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
So, Janine, I want to start off with this whole national security element, because we've seen a bit of this in the United States. I'll give you just a quick example. There was a state or municipality that was going to buy telecommunications equipment from the big Chinese telecommunications provider that competes with Cisco Systems here in the United States. I'll mispronounce the name if I say it, so I won't. But the U.S. government stepped in and just said this is not going to be allowed, because there was a lot of concern that the Chinese would have a listening post, basically be able to tap into everything being communicated through the channels there. Is that the sort of thing? Are we talking about telecommunications, or are there a lot of other parts of the British infrastructure that the government is concerned about?
We're definitely talking about telecoms, but you're right. We're also looking much more broadly than just telecoms. The one deal that I think really kick-started this process was the Chinese investment in the new nuclear power station, Hinkley Point C. That was very close to being signed by the UK government, I think in September 2015. The UK government then became sort of concerned that there wasn't a broader national security regime in place to review these sorts of investments. The deal was, in fact, signed, but following that, there has been this ongoing review of potential national security issues. I think it's worth sort of saying that we do already have certain powers to review foreign or indeed other investments that give rise to national security issues. But in the UK up until now, those powers have really been used in the context of transactions involving defence contractors. So what the government's looking to do now is really expand those powers, and the sorts of issues that they're saying they're going to look at are, first of all, cases where an investment could give rise to access to infrastructure and the ability to undertake espionage. Secondly, where the investment provides an opportunity to disrupt or destroy critical infrastructure, so very similar to the case that you mentioned. And thirdly, where the investment might provide a foreign government with the ability to dictate or alter services or give that government some sort of leverage in other negotiations. The problem that we've got is sometimes it can be really difficult to ascertain whether a particular investment could be considered by the government to give rise to these risks. And we've had a really recent example of that, because about a week ago, our Defence Secretary made a number of statements in the press about the risk of Russian attacks against US energy infrastructure, which really highlighted the fact that this perception of risk within government can change over time.
You know, the thing about this is that because of technology, virtually everything we're creating these days is technological in some form. It's online. It's connected to the internet. It's packed with chips. So it seems that a broader and broader array of infrastructure is susceptible to, say, hacking or espionage, foreign espionage. So it leaves us to wonder, particularly developed nations like the United States and Great Britain and so on, that whether we're going to have to build all our own stuff if we're really going to be this concerned about espionage. Obviously, there's a good reason to be concerned about it, especially with some of the hanky-panking going on from places like North Korea and Russia, among others. What about that?
You're raising a really good point. For us, you know, in the context of the proposed reform, a key message that we've been trying to ensure the government understands is we're talking about M&A transactions here. So we're talking about investments, the vast majority of which are providing finance capital for infrastructure that the UK needs. And in the vast majority of cases, the investors are you know, doing that for benign, pro-competitive reasons. The concern that we have with some of the proposals is that the government seems to be sort of trying to address an incredibly broad array of security and cybersecurity issues through the lens of foreign investment. And I think, you know, if the powers are too broad, I think it just creates a really high degree of uncertainty in relation to the UK legal regime. And up until now, we've had a pretty certain, a pretty stable, pretty open regime. And I think we just need to make sure that the proposals are as targeted and as investor-friendly as we can make them.
So what are, let's just go take a step back, and why don't you give us an overview of the United Kingdom's plans for this policy? What are the parameters of it?
Well, there's two parts to it. So there's some short-term proposals and then some longer-term proposals. The short-term proposals effectively are focused on amending the current thresholds for intervention on national security grounds to catch a broader range of investments, particularly in the military and dual-use sector, as well as the advanced technology sector. Now, these reforms are likely to be implemented pretty quickly, so they could indeed affect transactions that are already under contemplation. The second set of longer-term proposals are still very sort of at very early stages. So the government consultation was in the form of a green paper and was looking at a couple of different options. The first option would be a sort of a voluntary notification regime with expanded powers for the government to call in a really wide variety of transactions if they considered that it might give rise to national security concerns. The US has a voluntary regime for foreign investment known as CFIUS, so that's the kind of regime the government is thinking about. The alternative would be more of a mandatory notification regime where the businesses perform certain sort of essential functions in key parts of the economy, so civil nuclear, defence, critical infrastructure, airports, ports, energy, those sorts of things. There are a number of countries that have a mandatory foreign investment regime, including, for example, Australia and Canada. Now, at the moment, the government is looking at those two options. They're also looking at some hybrid options where they take a mandatory notification for certain types of infrastructure, plus then the ability to call in other transactions.
So, you know, my notes here remind me that I want to ask you what types of investments could the policy affect. You've already addressed that to some degree. You mentioned M&As. You have a foreign government that decides we would like to invest in your water system or in the, you know, co-invest in a nuclear power plant or what have you. Why don't you flesh that out a little bit for us, Janine? How broad does this go?
Yeah, and traditionally, the current powers that we've got in the UK, they're very focused on M&A transactions, so parties buying effectively shares or shareholding some sort of equity investment in a company that provides either defence or high technology or some other services. The current proposals would go much broader than that. So the proposals are that the government may even have the power to call in acquisitions of intellectual property or even bare assets, such as sort of plant machinery that doesn't amount to a business, or real estate if it's situated close to a sensitive government site. So at the moment, the government's still thinking through how broad the new powers should be, but there is the risk that that goes beyond sort of M&A transactions.
So let's get to the investment angle on this. Here in the United States, we've got institutional investors around the world that are very interested in infrastructure, especially seeing the tremendous need there's going to be over the next 10 and 25 years. And even individual investors, high net worth and ultra high net worth individuals here in the United States and around the world, have a great interest in infrastructure. So assuming some of them have invested or are thinking in terms of investing, we know some of them have invested. So what are the risks of this policy to institutional and individual investors looking to play in that area?
Up until now, as I said before, the powers have been very rarely used. I think we've only seen a handful of cases over the last few years. The risk, I guess, for institutional investors, it's going to largely depend on how the powers are implemented. But the risks are that, first of all, you may have to do a notification. Particularly if there is a sort of a mandatory regime introduced, then there will be the requirement to notify in a very broad range of different asset classes. Some of the asset classes that are being proposed, that the definition is pretty clear. So, for example, when we look at electricity generation, the proposals cover large-scale power generation of greater than 2 gigawatts with the capacity to significantly impact on system balancing. So it's pretty clear what sort of power stations we're talking about. But some of the criteria are really quite subjective. So in the case of energy suppliers, it's all energy suppliers that supply energy to a significant customer base. So first of all, investors will need to spend some time thinking about whether they need to make a notification or not. At the moment, we don't have a lot of information about how long that notification process is going to take or how much information is going to be requested. The government has raised the prospect that individual investors, could give rise to risks. So there is, at the moment, a risk that quite a substantial amount of information about transaction structures, and the ultimate investors may need to be provided. That's something the government's still thinking through. If the transaction does in fact raise potential national security issues, then the proposal is that the government will have a fairly broad range of powers to impose either a sort of commitments in terms of what information can be shared with outside of the UK. There's also the proposal is that they would have the power to block transactions. There's even some suggestion that they'd have the power to unwind transactions. I think we're hoping to get quite a lot more guidance from government as to, how they might use those powers. And as I said, to date, we've sort of not had any experience where those powers have been used in a way that I think would cause concern to investors. So at the moment, I think that the key risk that we face is just a degree of uncertainty.
Well, what about unwinding investments? In other words, I mean, it sounds to me like a deal is done, investments have been made, the government becomes aware of a problem after the fact and then says, this is going to have to be undone. How does that work in terms of an investor who's put money into it and maybe has already seen some type of realize some type of gain. How does the government make that investor whole, or does the government not concern itself with that?
Well, and this will really depend on whether we go for a mandatory or a voluntary regime. So in the UK, we've got experience of a voluntary regime in the context of merger control of antitrust. So here we already have a regime where an investor can close a transaction and decide to take the antitrust risk. If the government or the competition authorities find out later, the agencies find out later that there is a competition issue, they can call the transaction in. Really importantly, under the antitrust rules, the agencies cannot unwind a transaction. What they can do is they can require the investor to sell the asset that they purchased to another approved purchaser. But they can't require the original seller to take back the investment. So again, one of the issues that we've raised with the UK government is that the power to unwind a transaction, that's a very serious power. It's not one that the agencies currently have in the antitrust sphere, and we've therefore suggested to the government that that's something they need to rethink. We think that would be a step too far in the context of the policy objectives that they're trying to achieve.
Well, now that's interesting, because now you're talking about a forced sale. I could see an investor saying, I know you want us to sell, and I know it's been 6 months, but we're not getting the price we want. We're not getting the price that we really need. So stop beating us over the head. We want our fair market value. At some point, the government's going to lose its patience, I would imagine, and say, you know what, you're going to take the best offer you've had so far, period.
And that's exactly right, and that's how it works in the antitrust area. If you are required to make a divestment, that requirement applies. Whatever the prize. You raised a really important point, which is investors obviously also want to make sure that risk can't arise, as you said, 6 months after you completed the transaction. So again, one of the things that we've been discussing with the government is the fact that any power to call in a transaction after it completes has to be time limited. And in the antitrust area, that period is limited to 4 months from the point at which the transaction is made public, or if it was made public on completion, 4 months from completion. So we think that that period needs to be very limited. Also, investors need to be given the opportunity to obtain some certainty by getting guidance from the government. And given we're talking about national security issues, that guidance would no doubt be confidential. Also in cases where investors want to make sure they do not have any risk, that they can sort of notify and get approval in advance on the basis of a certain and fairly clear timetable. So again, those are all the sorts of issues that the government is currently thinking about, and we, working with a number of different industry groups, have been making sort of representations to the government as to the type of thing that they need to be thinking about.
I got to tell you, Janine, this sounds like it's got all the makings of a John le Carré novel. And I could see Janine Hulsman being a character there, sitting before a subcommittee of parliament and advising them on how to protect national security, while at the same time making sure they don't mess up the investment opportunities here that every government, I think, is desirous of right now, since infrastructure costs are just so high that most governments around the world, maybe with the exception of China, don't just fund them themselves. So that kind of brings up the question as to where you are on this thing. Are you testifying before parliamentary committees on this and trying to help the government shape this program? And is your interest protecting the investment opportunities at the same time? What role do you play, and what side are you on here?
So We're not quite at the stage yet of parliamentary committees, so the government is very actively seeking the views of investors, and we are, as a firm, have been involved with a couple of different industry bodies, so the BVCA and the City of London Law Society, and we've been very actively making submissions. We've met with a number of the officials that are involved in drafting this legislation, trying to give them as much help as we can, largely in order to make sure that, you know, as you said, they don't throw the baby out with the bathwater on this, because there is such a huge need for investment in infrastructure. The UK has had a very successful sort of model in terms of attracting that sort of investment. And we absolutely feel that, you know, if the government considers that this is important, and you know, I don't think anyone wants to sort of be telling the government not to think about national security. You know, we understand that that's important, but the investment is also incredibly important, and therefore it's really important that there is an investor-friendly process, and that the process is transparent. It's known up front. Investors know how to get the certainty that they need before they make these incredibly large investments.
What do you think about in terms of a timeline when it comes to getting more concrete and actionable details on the government's plans? When do you anticipate that will take formation?
So in terms of the short-term proposals, the government is expecting to come out with some legislation fairly soon. Now, that legislation will affect largely providers or suppliers of defence and dual use, as well as certain high-tech industries, semiconductors and things like that. The longer-term proposals, I think, we're quite a way off still. The initial green paper was very green, looking at two very broad sort of types of options. The next step for the government is to draft a white paper, setting out sort of more detail on their proposals. And once that's done, I think we'll then get into the whole process of looking at draft legislation, again, making sure that, you know, the investor perspective is taken into account in the legislation as well. So, you know, I think we're a way off, but it is really important even from the beginning that the investor voice is heard, and that, you know, that the government is not just thinking this through from a national security perspective, but also sort of understanding, you know, how these sorts of processes have to fit into a deal timetable, and how investors think about these issues.
Okay, so the British government issues a white paper. Here's what we're thinking. Yeah. Jeanine Holtzman and a lot of other parties weigh in on that and say, well, you know, we think it would be more effective if we would make the following adjustments. The way that works here in the United States, as I'm sure you well know, is a lot of campaign contributions go flying around, and a lot of heads get changed on it, because that's just the American way, taking campaign contributions and suddenly having a eureka moment about the other side of the issue. But it doesn't work that way in Britain. How malleable is Parliament, are the people in charge of this policy, how malleable are they to the arguments that you and others would make in terms of some revisions?
I think, you know, the officials within the government department that is looking after this, which is the Business and Energy Department, you know, they are very open to having those discussions. A number of those officials have been in industry, or have worked in other agencies that that deal, you know, in particular with merger filings. They do have, an understanding of, you know, broadly how these processes work. So to date, we have found them pretty open to having conversations, and to trying to find solutions. I think, you know, it's definitely the case with most governments, but particularly with the UK government at the moment, because we have a number of ongoing policy challenges, Brexit being a major one of those, that if you can come to the government with solutions, with ideas, with proposals for making things better, then they are usually willing to listen. So to date, as I said, we've had some really constructive discussions. We'll have to see if any of those are reflected in the white paper. But so far, I think coming up with suggestions and sort of constructive proposals has been definitely the best way forward.
So you and your law firm represent investors in transactions as well. Is that right, Janine?
That's right. Yeah. So we work pretty much across the broad spectrum of all the different infrastructure asset classes here in the UK.
So what would your nightmare scenario be on this? What kind of a policy? What concerns you most about what might end up being the final product?
I think the main thing that concerns me as a sort of a regulatory lawyer is having a process that isn't appropriately transparent. One that, so far we've had a really good track record here in the UK of attracting investment because we've had regulations that are pretty clear, transparent, predictable. It's very boring in some ways, but incredibly important for investment. And I think what we just need to make sure here, we understand the need for a degree of flexibility in the national security area because threats are changing over time. But again, we're just very keen to make sure that the government also understands that there does need to be a degree of transparency here, predictability, sort of a very clear business-friendly process for getting certainty. That's just really important for investment. So, my key concern is to make sure we get the government to, and the officials that are dealing with this to understand that.
Has there been a track record to date of interventions by the government? Is there any track record as to where the British government has stepped in? And if so, has that bode well for how the government might handle these cases, or has it bode poorly?
There has been some intervention, as I mentioned earlier, particularly in the defence, in relation to transactions involving defence contractors. I think the process there, a number of them are relatively old cases. We've had only one fairly recent case, which again related to telecommunications equipment that's in particular used by the emergency services. Generally, there have been fairly sort of the process has worked adequately in the sense that there has been that the issues have generally been resolved quickly without the need for an in-depth investigation. Typically, the issues that have come up have been remedied by a set of undertakings by suppliers, and those undertakings have related to, effectively continuity of supply, ensuring that either the British military or the police force are able to continue to have continuity of supply of the equipment that they need. There's also been confidentiality undertakings given. So up until now, the outcome of the cases that we've had have been pretty predictable. So up until now, I think people have understood the system and have been able to work within it. I think the biggest concern that we've got is under the new regime, if there's a real broadening of the different asset classes that we're dealing with, and if we're a wider range of views from within government, it just becomes a little bit more harder to predict, you know, what the issues are and how the government will resolve those issues. And that I think is just where government needs to, you know, at the moment spend a bit more time, you know, and provide a little bit more guidance to industry before introducing this new regime.
You know, I want to ask you about the longer-term effects on foreign investment, although that would be probably a fair degree of speculation. So let's look back. In over the last 5 or 10 or maybe even 15 years, has foreign investment in British infrastructure been escalating?
I think we've had, I mean, definitely, you know, in terms of the deals that I've seen, the variety of different investors that we've got in the UK, and the variety of sources of investment definitely increased. And again, you know, the UK, in particular in relation to infrastructure, we've obviously been at the forefront of privatizing a really broad range of different asset classes. And as we privatize those different asset classes, you know, I think that just the range and the amount of investment has definitely increased.
Interesting. So a lot at stake, both in terms of national security and economic vitality. Our guest has been Jeanine Hulsman. She's a partner at the law firm of Clifford Chance. We've been talking about this new British policy that calls for proposals that allow them to potentially block or unwind infrastructure investments on national security grounds. Jeanine Hulsman is one of the many people, I'm sure, who are working with the government to try to structure a plan that is workable, that rewards investors, but at the same time keeps the British people secure. Jeanine, I appreciate you taking the time. And before I sign off, say goodbye to you, I should remind our listeners that the latest edition of Institutional Investing in Infrastructure, one of our 7 titles here at Institutional Real Estate Incorporated, has a column, a Q&A with Jeanine Hulsman on this very subject. So there's more on it in the magazine. Jeanine, appreciate you walking us through this.
No worries. Thank you very much.